Guess who's back? Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
What's up, y'all? I am back. That's right. It's Sal, and I am back like Baby Got. I am back like The Empire Strikes. I am back like Marty McFly to the future. I am back, and I am here to present you something different. You know, I couldn't leave you little monkeys alone, so I decided to put together a little something for Around Comics. This is going to be called Around Comics Presents, and it's basically me talking about one individual book, most likely a graphic novel, but it could be a trade paperback. It probably won't be a single issue, but you never know. I've been known to change my mind before. And I'm going to hopefully talk to a creator of that graphic novel or trade, or one of the creators on it, if it was a collaborative effort. And that's pretty much what it's going to be. I don't know how often this will happen. I don't know how many times in a month that it will get produced, but I'm going to try and do them as regular as possible. I'm going to try and find interesting books to read and interesting creators to talk to about those books, and then do it. So that's it. That's what Around Comics Presents is. Our first one today is Matt Kent's new book, Three Story, The Secret History of the Giant Man. It is a about 200-page graphic novel that Matt created, and it's the story of a man that's born with a condition that makes him grow larger than anyone else, and he continues to grow. And the story is basically told from the perspective of three different people in his life. It starts off with his mother and her issues dealing with this son that just continues to grow. Then it goes on to his wife and how their relationship is affected by his problems and his celebrity. And then it finishes up with his daughter and her trying to understand who her father is. It's a terrific little book published by Dark Horse Comics. It retails for $19.95. It's a hardcover, about 200 pages long. So if you haven't already, go check it out and read it. It's good stuff. But now, without further ado, Around Comics presents Three Story, The Secret History of the Giant Man with Matt Kent. First off, where did the idea for the book come from? What was sort of the germ of inspiration for you for this particular story?
Yeah, well, I'll say a couple of years ago, I met like a second or third cousin of mine who was just this really big guy and had big hands and just really big. I got to talking to him, and he had had this tumor on his pituitary gland that when he was a teenager just kept made him grow and grow and grow. And they did all the CAT scans and stuff, and they found the tumor and they cut it out, and then he was growing normally after that. But they said if they hadn't found the tumor and cut it out, he would have kept growing, you know, till he died.
Wow.
And so I was like, wow, that's really crazy that you know could happen. And then you see him, and his, you know, he's just got these giant hands, and he just looked kind of cool. I was like, well, that'd be a good idea for a story. And I mean, I grew up on Marvel Comics and giant, you know, the Giant Man from the Avengers and everything, and so I sort of liked the idea of sort of taking that sort of pulpy idea, but doing a more realistic take on it, and so then I sort of built a story around that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. Before I read the book, I sort of was under this assumption that it was actually more of a biography of Robert Wadlow. That's what I thought initially before I had read it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because he's in there. He makes a little appearance.
Right, right.
We'll talk about him briefly. But yeah, and that's another thing, too. I read his whole story. I read all about him and got more details about, you know, problems. You know, what's problematic about growing 10 feet tall.
Yeah, I'd imagine there's plenty. Well, yeah, and you certainly go into it in the book, you know, that him dealing with the issues of being that large and continuing to grow and that. But, well, the other thing I should mention is that, you know, it's called Three Story. It's sort of a play on words that he's three stories tall, but also it's actually three stories told from the perspective of the three women in his life, his mother, his wife, and then his daughter. What made you kind of make the decision to tell the story from those perspectives as opposed to maybe his perspective or something else?
I guess when I first approached the story, my initial instinct was, we're going to follow every moment of his life and hear all of his thoughts and get into his head and all that. But then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, that seemed like kind of the easy way. But the easy way to tell a story, or like what you kind of expect. Like when I pick up a book like that, I'm like, oh, that's what we'll get. We'll get his voice over everything, and everything he's thinking. I tried to do the opposite, and just try to make it a little harder on myself as a writer, and also just try to make it a little more interesting, and hopefully get three different views of this guy, three different perspectives, and then maybe you get some overlap where they agree, but then also points where they sort of don't. So you have, as a reviewer, you sort of have to fill in the gaps and sort of figure out, who is this giant man? It's not all on the page. I like the idea of making me work for it a little bit and try to figure out who he is, what he's about.
Yeah, and it was, not that it was challenging to read, but it was a challenging read in some ways because you don't ever get to know this guy that much. I mean, you only get the perspectives of the people around him. We rarely did you ever put in any of his actual thoughts or emotions or feelings. I mean, from time to time, you sort of put that in there, but it really was told from their perspectives, and it was interesting because, I mean, for me, like, thinking about guys like, Robert Wardlow, which has always sort of been a fascination for me as a kid. I always was really sort of obsessed with like the Guinness Book of World Records and all that sort of stuff. And him being from Illinois was also interesting. And we don't really know that much even about him as a person. He was real beyond the celebrity of him. Was that something that sort of wanted to examine, that this guy, that people like this exist and they become something other than, maybe human or become so much more of a celebrity than a person?
Yeah, I guess unconsciously I probably sort of wanted to do something like that. I wanted to get a couple things in the book that if I just sort of followed him directly, I wouldn't have gotten. And I like the idea of having three different generations of women and their, what's the difference between those generations and how they react and what their lives are like. As a byproduct of that, then you don't, the giant man does become, you're sort of a spectator on his life through these women. And just like in real life where you have this person that's bigger than life and you never know him, and all you do is you either read an article about him, or you happen to run into him, or you see him for a little bit, but you don't get the whole picture. So, I guess that's part of it. I don't think I went into the book thinking, here's going to be my commentary on celebrity and what that's like, but it's certainly sort of a byproduct of that.
Right. Well, going back to the three women, the first story in the book is about his mother and her dealing with the fact that he was sort of I don't want to say it, maybe an unwanted child, but she isn't necessarily thrilled with the idea of this child because her husband is in World War II and she loses him and she's left with Craig. And this issue of him, growing abnormally. And it seems like she sort of has regrets about it, that, she met Butchie, her husband, very quickly and got pregnant, and then he went off to war, and now she's left with this with this baby with, you know, this abnormal growth. What was sort of the idea behind, you know, defining her character in that way, or making her perspective of that? Was there something in particular that sort of inspired you for that, or was it just, did the character just kind of come out that way?
Yeah, you know, yeah, there's a lot of like personal family history and things I sort of drew on, and my grandmother, that's exactly what happened to her. She got married, she got pregnant, he went off to war, he got killed. And then her son was my dad. So I started doing inspiration from that as far as, you know, what would that be like? and it was hard, like in real life, like my grandmother, it wasn't easy.
Sure.
And, so I guess I sort of used that as the inspiration for that and sort of projected myself a little bit to think, you know, what would that be like? And then on top of it all, hey, your kid's going to grow 3 stories tall.
Right.
How do you deal with that on top of all that other stuff? So,
well, that's,
so
what that's one of the
yeah,
things.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it verged from reality after that. I put her under a little more stress in the book than in real life.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, one of the things that really interested me so much about the book was the fact that I thought you made such interesting choices for these characters, that it wasn't easy for them to be in his life. You know, them dealing with a lot of different, their own issues, their own personal issues on top of, or maybe because of him. And the whole time he's just sort of there, he just exists. It's not something he can control or change. He's, you know, he's just, that's who he is, and they have to deal with it. And they don't necessarily deal with it really well. At least I don't, you know, I didn't feel like his mother dealt with it particularly well. I thought, you know, she had a very hard time dealing with it and sort of projected her loss of her husband on him and that kind of thing. And please.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
Correct me if I'm ever wrong in assuming anything that I, this is all
no,
just
no, that's all right.
my,
that's the funny thing. I think the grandmother, you know, his mother, I think that is the trickiest character because she, I don't think she is right, and she doesn't react the way she should. And, but then at the same time, she's going through all this stuff that I try to make her sympathetic, but at the same time, I just kind of wish she had been a little bit better.
So, right.
To me, that was like the most interesting character for me because of that, because I didn't want her to be unlikable. I didn't want you to hate her. She wasn't abusive, but then you kind of just wish she had been a little bit better.
Right. No, absolutely. And I do think she was actually, in a strange way, like more sympathetic than his wife. And we can get to that in a minute, but I did kind of feel that way, that I, for some reason, even though I thought she didn't handle things how you would want her to, she was more sympathetic for some reason. But going back to his mother, one of the questions I had about it as I was reading it, and you had kind of said this in the beginning of our conversation, that you sort of want it to be a challenge. You want people to work for things a little bit, and I felt you did a really good job of that, because there were things in here that were sort of you could interpret them in a lot of different ways, or you could look into things possibly. And I found myself in the second read really doing that, you know, like catching things that I didn't catch the first time around. And so there's a couple of things I wanted to ask you about, particularly with the mother, the roses. To me, it sort of symbolized, you know, how she felt about Craig. She had gotten these roses, and it was the last sort of memory from her husband. And, it was something she didn't want. She didn't like roses, but now she's sort of stuck. She's stuck with this memory of roses, and it's the last thing of her husband, which to me was a parallel to Craig. It was the same sort of thing. Was that something you were trying to convey, or did that just kind of come out through the story?
Yeah, you know, I put that irony. I don't know if that's irony. I put a little bit in there just because, yeah, it is. Like, here's this thing where you know, her husband's dead. She's got these flowers. Yeah, it's definitely intentional. But, yeah, I just, again, I'm just trying to make the most horrible, sad story you could ever read, so that's how I do it. We'll kill her husband, we'll make her son a freak, and then give her a bunch of flowers she hates on top of it. Yeah, that's pretty much true.
Maybe that's why she's sympathetic, because you completely made her life so horrible.
Yeah, I made her life more horrible than anybody else's.
another scene that was sort of interesting to me, and I wasn't sure what to pull from it, but the and you'd used this in a couple of places in the book, was when she had gone to the movies the first time in the book, and she had with well, I think it was, she was, I don't know if she was with Butchie or not, but they went and saw the Maltese Falcon, and she sort of is looking up at the screen at that last scene with Effie, or is that the character's name? I can't remember. Sort of being hauled away by the police. I thought that was interesting, because I love that movie, and the idea that, you know, she maybe was connecting with that character in some weird way. You know, with the loss of her dreams, and that, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of what I pulled from. I wasn't sure if that was.
Yeah, no, that's true. Like, I love the Maltese Falcon. So the whole movie, I think, sort of fits it sort of fit in a way where, like, they're all trying to get this thing, and then just the disappointment at the end.
Right.
Like, there's nobody ends up with anything. So again, yeah, one more thing to just. Miserable things you can sort of relate to. with all the characters sort of being disappointed.
Right.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, the more I talk about this, the worse I feel. I feel really bad for it now.
Well, you know, let me ask you, was there ever a moment when you you thought, well, maybe I should give Craig a happier ending? Was there ever?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, when I was done with the book, I was kind of depressed, and I went back through, and I was like, I don't think the book is depressing. I think there's just parts of it that made me really sad, and then I sort of felt bad after having finished it to inflict this book on people. But then I reworked the ending a couple times, and I had a whole different ending, and I just scrapped it. I had drawn it, I painted it, it was totally finished, and I cut that parts of that off, and then I tried to make it more like sad all the way through. But then I tried to make a little glimmer of hope at the end with his daughter.
Right, and I think you did.
Maybe you think, yeah,
that it was sort of uplifting, and she seemed like the only character that was sort of able to get past it, in some way. And she was really actually a really interesting character to me. I guess I'm going to skip ahead a little bit to the daughter. And
okay.
For some reason, when I was reading that chapter of the book and her search for her father, and maybe it was just because of the sort of Bigfoot-like picture in Vegas of Craig, but I started thinking about Lisa Marie Presley.
Yeah.
And just because I'm a big Elvis fan, and I always thought about her life and sort of, you know, he died when she was very young. She didn't really know him that well as a person, but his celebrity, his bigger than life. I mean, he was a giant that dominated her life, you know, and every aspect of it. Did you draw on her? I mean, I don't know if that was, had anything to do with what you wrote, but. For whatever reason, that's what I kind of I started thinking about her for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little reference in there, like the Las Vegas to me. And I think in the back of my mind, I do think about that. It's interesting because there's two. You can take either perspective. You can be, and the book sort of forces you to take the daughter, you know, the women's perspective. So it is. It's like, what is it like to be married to Elvis or to be Elvis's daughter? You know, by taking her last name, his last name. That pretty much changes your life forever.
Right.
You know, regardless of what you do. So yeah, it is one of those things where, you know, you're literally living in the shadow of this guy if you barely knew. And so that's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it.
All right, well, let's go back to the his wife. And I'm sorry, I should have written down all their names because I can't remember the wife's name now off the top of my head.
That's okay. Don't embarrass me by asking me what their names are.
Okay, I won't. I remember Craig.
We'll just pretend we know. You know, it's the
Joe. It was
the
Joe.
Wife, the daughter. Okay.
Joe. Joe's her name. Is the wife.
Yeah.
Joe is. You know that chapter of the book, the middle chapter, with his relationship with his wife, and we start to see his celebrity and him going out and touring and doing different things and how that affects his relationship with Joe. I found her to be the sort of, for whatever reason, the hardest character to understand. Because at the beginning of it, it seemed like I wasn't sure how to take her. You know, like at the beginning, she seemed like she was sort of in it for the celebrity of it. She was attracted to him because he was this, you know, bigger than life figure. But obviously there's love there, and then as their relationship sort of starts to disintegrate, it seems like she was quick, and maybe a little quick to give up on it, even though maybe that's hard to say, because what do you do when your husband is 25 feet tall, or however tall, you know, he gets, but...
Right.
But I just, for whatever reason, I had the hardest time dealing with her as a character. Was there, but at the same time, I thought she was really interesting and their relationship was really interesting, and how she changed as a person over the course of the relationship was really interesting. What was sort of your thought process with her, and what were you trying to sort of, you know, get out in that chapter?
Yeah, I guess, she's the most interesting to me of them all, because she's the only one, she's the only character that, through her own free will, had a relationship with Craig. You know, the mother, you know, didn't have
right.
a choice.
Right.
And the daughter didn't have a choice. So she was the only one that sort of had her own free will interacting with him. And I think at the beginning, she definitely was just attracted to this guy who's kind of famous, or kind of, you know... he's getting all this attention, and so that's sort of reflecting off him and a little bit onto her, and I think she liked that, and she was an artist, so she wanted to, or she ended up becoming an artist, so she sort of benefited from that in a way. But yeah, I think her arc is sort of a weird one to me, because she starts out, she's sort of initially attracted him for superficial reasons, then loves him, and then he's 30 feet tall, and, you know, he can't hear her anymore.
Right.
So I think at that point, then it's like, well, she definitely is torn. It's like, I love this guy, but he's never going to be smaller again. He'll never be able to hear me again. And so I think she gets a little bit lonely. And, yeah, and I don't know how much I want to actually say. I try to be vague about sort of,
and that's
certain
fine.
Things in
a
relationship, because I just to leave some mystery there.
But, sure.
Like I definitely know, you know, everything she did. I took some bits out of it just because I wanted her to be a little bit more mysterious, or have a little more privacy.
Well, that's
I don't know,
yeah.
That
I don't.
Weird.
I certainly don't want to sit here and try and, you know, get you to you know, analyze or give up, you know, that sort of you know, mystery to it, because I think that's the, you know, part of the charm of the work is that, you know, people can interpret it in their own ways. And I definitely don't want you to give that up. And I don't want us to give away too much of the story either, because there's some interesting twists and turns in it that, I don't want to, for people that maybe haven't read it yet and will listen to this, I don't want them to be spoiled by any of it. So, it is definitely, I mean, I did find it, at times challenging, you know, to my, thought process of just trying to understand these people, and not challenging in a bad way at all, challenging in a good way. It made me, you know, think about this and think about what that life would be like, both as Craig or someone, you know, close to him. And I thought you did a great job of giving us enough of him and giving us enough of those perspectives to bring up those questions and make you wonder, but at the same time, leaving plenty for interpretation and letting, you know, the reader sort of figure out what they think on it themselves. So, I do want to talk to you about the artwork, because, you know, I thought a couple of the things that were just great about it. Because in the beginning, the book seems very real. It's very grounded. And you use some multimedia techniques, you know, you use some newspaper clippings and different things like that, that I felt really gave it a sense that this could be a biography, or could be a true story. And as the story progresses, it gets a bit more fantastic. At the same time, though, it never left the ground in the sense that it became unbelievable. Even in the end, it seemed like it could have happened. That we, you know, like a story that could have happened that the government covered up or something like that. But
right.
Was it a real conscious decision on your part to do that in the beginning, to make sure that you really set it in reality and gave it that feel?
Yeah, I guess I went into the whole book thinking, you know, what if this could happen? What if this, you know, I had to give up the fact that, you know, nobody would be able to live past whatever, 10 feet tall. You just physically, your bones wouldn't hold up and you couldn't do it. But I, with that one leap of faith, if you can take that one leap, where it's like, well, you know, if he kept growing and he could live, I was like, what, you know, what would it really be like? So that when I wrote it, every aspect of his life, I was thinking, you know, how is he gonna address himself? Is he gonna be naked for this whole book? and then how distracting is that gonna be to draw? So I figured out a way where he'd be able to have clothes. But yeah, just practical stuff like that was really interesting to me to sort of figure out, and that was where the fun part was. It's like, where does he poop? And how is he going to be fed? You know, there's a certain point where it's like, how much is he going to have to eat? Who's paying for that?
Right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of little stuff like that, and there's tons of little side stories. I don't know if you saw the little Dark Horse, the MySpace Presents. I did a couple 8-page short stories about him.
No, I haven't seen it.
There's some, like, little self-contained stories of the Giant Man. So those are just some little other little aspects. You know, I got like probably 20 or 30 more of those I could do, where one of them's just about these guys who their job is transporting his poop. So there's a lot of stuff like that. I try to think about every aspect of it, and I do it as realistically as I could. So I did think about it a lot.
Well, definitely. I mean, it definitely made for a lot of interesting parts of the story, because you do start thinking about that as he continues to grow and grow. It's like, how is this guy going to survive? How does he do all these things? And I think throughout the whole book, even with, you know, the three women too, there were certain things you start asking yourself as a reader, how they do things, how they either cope with things or handle different situations, that kind of stuff. So, no, I found it fascinating, especially, you know, some of the smaller things, just like when he's being transported in the back of a truck, you know, and you show it sort of, you know, X-ray goggle sort of thing, and where you can see the truck or see him sitting in there, and just different things like that. I think really added to it, just the overall feel of it. One of the things I did want to ask you is, why Elmhurst College?
That's easy. My parents went there.
Oh, okay.
And, it's funny, because I took this book is strangely a lot of, you know, my family history. I just basically stole all of it and put it into the book. But yeah, my parents met there, and the turtle race thing is something that my dad set up to sort of meet my mom.
No kidding.
There's a lot of little stuff like that in there that I just outright stole, and then hope they didn't mind. No, my parents read it. My dad sent me an email, and he's like, "Yeah, it's interesting how you took real things and then changed them around." So he was okay with it.
Oh, that's good. It was just funny because, I mean, that's literally, you know, 15 minutes from where I live is Elmhurst College, and it just seems so strange. It's like, wow, why Elmhurst College?
That's super funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Gino's Pizza, I don't know, I guess it's still there, because I think my parents still go up there and eat. Yeah, that's why.
Gino's Pizza still there in Elmhurst College. Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. And that's why, because you're in St. Louis, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And you grew up in St. Louis?
Yeah, sort of. I was like, between here and Kansas City, I lived here most of my life. So.
Okay.
But, yeah, take a copy into Gino's Pizza next time. Maybe they'll give you a free pizza.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll have to show somebody over there. Now, most of this is, most of your work is painted, right? I mean, most of the this book and your other books are, is it watercolor paints or are you using?
Yeah, it is. All the line work. The solid line art is just India ink, and then I watercolor over the top of it.
Okay. You know what? One of the other questions I was going to ask you, as far as, you know, doing a graphic novel, was this something where you sort of laid it all out ahead of time? Was it something that you worked on, you know, chapter by chapter, or how, you know, what was sort of the process on this story?
Yeah, I'll see. Every book is kind of different. This, but all of them are sort of similar in that I usually just start out with like a 2 or 3 page synopsis of the whole thing. Like, he's going to do this, and then he's going to do that, and then just like the major story beats. And then after I do that, I'll go in and I'll just thumbnail the whole thing out. So I'll thumbnail all 200 pages out. You know, just small like 2x3 sketches of each page and the action, what's going to happen, and then I'll make little notes to the side if I know, like, what some of the dialogue is going to be here. Sometimes I just lay out, I'm like, here's where they're going to talk about this, and then I'll work the dialogue out later. And so I'll go through the whole book like that, and then for this one, for Dark Horse, she wanted to see a script, full script, so I typed up the whole script after that, you know, with all the dialogue and everything, and then I just start penciling it. And I pencil ink it, color it, and then after I scan it in, then usually I go through the script again and sort of fix it. And usually what happens is I end up stripping out like 50% of the dialogue, and most of the words, I just end up stripping half that out. but it's different because when I'm writing it, you know, I'm not, the pictures aren't working as hard. And then by the time I'm done, I look at the images and it's like, well, I don't have to say anything here because you can obviously tell he's, you know, throwing a tree.
Right. Yeah, I thought comparatively to a lot of books today, the dialogue was relatively scarce. I mean, there is not a ton of dialogue. There's some text pieces in there, you know, between the articles and that kind of stuff, but it seemed more, realistic to me as someone would tell a story, as opposed to, it seems like the mountains of dialogue that we get in a lot of comics today, where it's, you know, overwritten or every little detail is described, as opposed to, you know, when you tell a story, you leave a lot out and you leave a lot to people's imagination. And that's sort of the feel I got from it was that. Is that just a natural thing for you to do, or was that, you know, through the editing process, or was it more of a conscious sort of thing to try and go back to the leaving the mystery in the story for people?
Yeah, I guess that's sort of my I guess it's just how I look at comics. I think that it's words and pictures together, and when they work together, it's almost more like a big long poem, you know, that doesn't rhyme, doesn't have a meter, it doesn't have rhythm. But right. there is rhythm to it. But again, it's more akin to a poem than it is to like a novel, because you know, there is a lot of in between stuff that the reader has to fill in. You sort of insinuate things or allude to things, and this dialogue, the big pieces of dialogue in the book, I don't like comics where it's just heads talking back and forth to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had sections of dialogue in there, but I tried to do it in a way where it made it a little more interesting or added something to it. So I had like the blueprints for his house, and there's dialogue as they walk through the house, and so the dialogue is sort of key to each part of the house, and you sort of get this vague conversation between them about, I don't know, was that the, there's a conversation where they're totally talking about sex.
Right.
But
right.
I just tried to do it in a way where it was a little more artful and not just talking heads. I did it a couple other times. I think I used a lot of the ads to do that with.
No, I thought I really enjoyed that that two-page spread you did of the blueprint of the tower and them walking through it, and I thought it worked really well. And was an interesting choice to do that with. And that's sort of, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that it seems like you do in this book is you did a lot of problem solving, like interesting problem solving. Is that something that's fun for you of, and it seems that way because you've already mentioned some things that it seems like that's sort of the challenge you're looking for is figuring out a way to solve a certain part of the story in a more of an interesting or challenging way.
Yeah, I definitely go into a book. Everything I do, I try to either artificially set up some sort of thing to make it more difficult, or I just don't. I don't like to just put something in there without thinking about it. Mm-hmm. The new book, I'm doing this book for Vertigo, and the editor had come back and they wanted to add a page at the end that said the end at the end of the book, and I was like, well, I don't. It's the end of the book. If I tell people it's the end, then I think I've written it. I don't think I've written it right. But I figured out a way. I figured out a way to do the end page there where it makes the editor happy, and it says the end, but it's going to do it in a crazy way that hasn't been done before. So now I'm kind of excited about it. I'm really happy to have a book that says the end at the end because nobody's done it like that. But I'll leave that. That's going to be a surprise. But yeah, I tend to go into projects and think, well, I've only seen it done this way, and why is it done that way, and let's see if I can do it some way that's extra hard and takes me twice as long.
How long did
that?
How long did this book take you to do, start to finish? Do you know about?
I would say not including the initial concept. I have no idea how long that took me, but you know, like the 2 or 3 page pitch that I put together. But from like September to February is about how long it took. How many months is that? 5 or 6 months, maybe.
About 5 months, yeah, 5 months.
Yeah, so it took me about that long.
Okay.
Not including like the initial plot outline.
And was the decision to have it published through Dark Horse, was that something, did you go and pitch to them, or did they come to you asking for a book, or was it just a situation that happened to work out?
Yeah, no, I knew an editor there, and I pitched it to them, just because I've been doing a bunch of books with Top Shelf, and I love Top Shelf, and I'm doing a couple more with them still. But I thought with Dark Horse, felt like I was reaching everybody that reads Top Shelf books. I'm reaching them already.
Mm-hmm.
So with Dark Horse, I was like, well, they tend to pull in a little more mainstream reader. And I don't think my books are indie books. Everybody says they're indie books, and maybe they are. I don't look at them that way.
Right.
I mean, I'm like, it's tons of spies, and there's a big giant man. And, I don't look at them as indie books, but... But I thought with Dark Horse, you know, I get people like my brother, big comic fan. But Dark Horse is usually about as indie as he gets. And so So I thought, well, if I can pull in more people like that, I think that would be beneficial.
No, absolutely. And you're right. I wouldn't. I mean, I don't know what you say, what you called, what is indie? I don't know. I mean, when I think indie books, it's more sort of, I don't know, autobiographical kind of stuff or slice of life. But it's so hard to say at this point. I mean, there's, so many different types of independent comics. But this is a story, I think, I mean, like you said, it's got so many elements of fantasy and different, fantastic sort of things in it that, I would hope that a larger audience would grab onto it and appreciate it, because it's a really wonderful read and I really enjoyed it. But going back to the Top Shelf, you said you're going to have a couple more books coming out from them in the future.
Yeah, I'm under contract with them to do two more books. So I'm doing two follow ups to Super Spy, which is going to be. Super Spy is going to be a trilogy, so the second book's Supernatural, which I'm writing now, and the third book's going to be Supercomputer. So Supernatural's going to be like all ghosts, and then Supercomputer is going to be sci-fi.
Okay. So, well, I have to admit to you, I haven't read Super Spy yet. This is the first book of yours that I've read, so I apologize, but I'm going to rectify that. I will go get Super Spy, definitely.
No, that's cool. See, that proves my dark horse.
There you go. I'm a perfect example.
Yep.
Chris over at Top Shelf, he's a great publisher, isn't he, though? I mean, he's...
Oh, yeah.
He's just
totally. Everyone says he's the nicest guy in comics, and he totally is.
Yeah, he really is.
They're awesome.
He loves what he's doing. But let's talk a little bit about, if you can, I don't know what you can say yet, but... Like you mentioned, you have a book coming out from Vertigo called Revolver, correct? That's the
name of it? Yeah, that's right.
And that's a graphic novel?
It's a 200-page graphic novel.
Can you tell us anything about it at all, or is it still...
Yeah, no. I'm pretty sure I can blab about it now. It's this guy who wakes up one day, goes to work, and then the world sort of ends. And there's like terrorist attacks and a virus and, like a dirty bomb. All this stuff happens, natural disasters, pretty much wrecks the whole world. And so he decides to leave the office for his day job, and he sort of has to survive and sort of works with his former boss, and they sort of try to figure out what to do. And then he goes to bed that night. He wakes up the next morning, and... everything's back to normal. Nobody remembers anything happening. Everything's the way it was. He's got his horrible, boring job. So he goes in there, and he's like, what in the world's going on? And so he suffers through the regular day, and then he goes home, goes to bed, wakes up the next day, and it picks up where it left off. So the world's wrecked again. So the whole book flips back and forth, every day. As he lives one day in the end of the world, one day in his normal job.
Ah, that sounds cool.
He sort of has to figure out what to do, and at the end, he sort of figures. I don't know. I don't want to blow the surprise. There's a surprise.
Okay, don't spoil it. Now I want to read
it. Cool. There's a lot of cool end of the world stuff. There's like missiles and guns. it's like probably the most action-packed 200 pages I've ever drawn. So.
And when does that come out?
That's coming out in July, I think, right before
San
Diego.
Very cool. That sounds awesome. I can't wait to see it. I'll catch up with the Super Spy stuff before that.
Yeah, that's cool.
You had mentioned something earlier. You were talking about poetry, and I have to agree with you. It's funny. I was actually thinking about it, especially the first chapter with the mother. How much her dialogue did sound like poetry, and I was wondering, are you a fan of poetry?
No, I'll say no. here's the thing is, I like the idea of poetry, I don't write it. I used to when I was in college, I took poetry classes, but I'm not a big fan of it. I like prose, I like fiction, I like novels. Short stories. I don't even know that I really like short stories. like that one. So there you go. But I do, as I'm writing comics, so there definitely is an element to that where, but I think the images make it better than poetry for me.
Right, sure. No, I was just, like, once again, it was sort of like one of those things where I'm trying to, and it probably didn't make any sense, but for some reason I started thinking about, and I'm not a big poetry fan at all. I've read a little bit of poetry, but for some reason I started to think about a Sylvia Plath poem called Metaphors when she's talking, and I think the sort of general thought on that poem is it's about her being pregnant and not enjoying it. And that's, there's some lines in it that for whatever reason, that first chapter with the mother and the baby, it had me thinking about that poem, which is really weird because most of the time I don't ever think about poetry, but
and now you've lost every one of our listeners.
Exactly. All right. Well, one last question, before I let you go, and thanks again for spending a Friday evening away from video games with me. Are you reading anything good lately?
I've been reading a lot of Kurt Vonnegut. I read Slaughterhouse-5 years ago, and then a friend of mine, I have a friend he's got probably the best unpublished novel I've read, and it kind of reminded me of Vonnegut, so I read his book, that's all he's got, so I started reading Vonnegut to sort of fill that need I had to read sort of funny, meaningful fiction, and I'm reading Breakfast of Champions now, and I just finished Siren of the Titan, so.
Wow.
It's good. Fun.
Good.
Did you mean comics? I'm trying to think about comics.
I did mean comics, but that's all right. I read novels too, so. But now we've really lost all of our listeners because I don't...
No. Let me go back. I hate novels. I hate poetry. I only like comics.
Only comic books. Are you reading any comics at all? Anything?
I'm reading... Here, I'll look at... I got a stack of them by my bed. I'm reading Pluto, the manga.
Oh, God, that's good. I just finished the second volume of that. Man, is that a fantastic read.
Yeah, I really like it. I'm reading that, and I'm going back and reading the original Astro Boy story it's based on, but I'm reading them sort of side by side just to compare,
How is that? I haven't read the Astro Boy. I'm kind of interested in the movie, but how?
Kind of. The Astro Boy, the comics?
Yeah.
They're okay. I like Tezuka. I like his other stuff, like those big fat books they have. I can't remember the titles. Ode to Ikajiro or something.
Yeah.
I like those. Astro Boy to me is more like just like one robot story after another, and it's fun, but I can read a couple and I get it.
Right.
But, so I'm reading Pluto. I'm reading, I just finished all the Wednesday comics. I thought those were awesome.
Very cool. Yeah. I still have to finish the last couple. I haven't gotten to them. But that was pretty awesome.
You're
doing another thing, a Black Widow story, right?
Strange Tales. That came out last week, I guess.
Did it?
Week or two ago. Yeah, Strange Tales number 2. That came out. Yeah, that was super fun.
That's right up your alley, a little espionage.
It really was. I was telling some guy at a convention that he was looking at the pages, and I was like, that panel is probably the most fun I've had doing comics my whole life. And it was the panel where the Hulk is jumping and then he's slamming into the ground. And I swear I was inking that. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe I do this for a living. And it's like 2:00 in the afternoon, I'm inking the Hulk and watching whatever cartoon or something. I was like, is this real? If you told me I'd be doing this as an adult, I would not have believed you, but yeah, that's some of the most fun I've had doing comics ever.
That's cool. Any future plans on more mainstream stuff at all, or are you sticking to the graphic novels?
I got a couple Black Widow long form projects that I haven't had time to show them to the editor. I've been too busy. But I want to. It's just a matter of getting to it on my stack to do.
So what is the fascination with spies? Where did that come from?
I have no idea. I know when I was a kid, I grew up reading all the James Bond, or watching all the James Bond movies, and I did read all the novels after that. And so I love the sort of the armchair travel.
Uh-huh.
Like all those Bond movies, and then the books especially were just like basically travel books with some, with a bunch of spy stuff in it.
Right.
But so I grew up on those, and then as I got older, I was like, I want to do the perfect spy book that has everything I love in it, which is gadgets and World War II, which I love, and,
sure.
And so I just tried to do this book that would have everything I liked in it.
Yeah, those I picked up a couple of the re-released Bond films on Blu-ray, and man, you know that presentation of those films is just fantastic. It's like watching a new movie because it really was just the scenery and the landscapes and the you know shots that they got in those awesome all the you know traveling around the world and all the different locations that they shot those movies in, and you see them on Blu-ray and it's just awesome. It's like that world doesn't exist anymore. But
yeah, totally. Especially like the Connery ones in the '60s where
yeah.
You know, the cars and the everything is just the clothes, and it's as close to being there as you're gonna get.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Really good. Well, Matt, I'm gonna let you go. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and the book was great. I hope it's doing really well for you. I hope that that you know we can get some more people to pick it up after listening to this. I look forward to your future work, and you definitely have a fan now after I read this because I really really did enjoy it, and thank you again.
Awesome, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Well, you have a good evening, and we'll talk again sometime.
All right, sounds good. Stay in touch.
All right, Matt. Thank you. Well, that was Matt Kent. I want to thank him again for spending time with us, and that was Around Comics Presents Three-Story Man, The Secret History of the Giant Man. Or I should say Three-Story, The Secret History of the Giant Man. It was a really, really interesting read. I really enjoyed it. I am definitely a Matt Kent fan now after reading this, and I am going to go back and get his super spy stuff and look forward to his future works. It was really something that I was able to kind of pore over, and I read it a couple of times and even saw stuff in it the second time around that I didn't get from it the first time around. It's very much like just a good novel. I mean, you know, I don't mean to say that in any sort of disparaging way towards graphic novels, but it just has that sort of, that, I don't know, classic feel to it. Everything he does, and that was one thing I forgot to bring up to him. He is a designer. He was a designer before he was a comic book creator. And the book design itself for the Three Story is really interesting. It's a hardcover. And on the cover, if you haven't seen it, it's basically a inside interior of a house with a window, and the window is die cut out, and you see through it, you see the interior page, and it's Craig's eye looking in at the window. And then when you open the book, the window is now in his head, and he's looking off in the, you know, in interior of the book. It's really a sharp design. It's overall just the whole package of the book is beautiful, and you know, if you haven't seen Matt's work before, his painted style is very interesting, and I really like it and really enjoyed Three Story a lot. So hopefully, if you haven't read it by now, this will help you make the decision to go pick it up and give it a chance. It's definitely a good comics, and you're missing out if you think that it's some sort of like indie, you know, book or something that you wouldn't be interested in. It's definitely a story that I think anyone could be interested in, regardless of you know, their taste in comics. But that's it. That is the first Around Comics Presents. Thank you for listening. Hopefully I'll get more of these out. If you happen to be a comic book creator out there that has a graphic novel or a trade that you think I might like and you would like to join me on the show, feel free to send me an email, sal@aroundcomics.com, and maybe we can get that together. Otherwise, if you're a listener and you have questions or comments or have something you want to chime in about on the show, please feel free to email me at the same email, and we'll go from there. But thanks again, everyone. I'm glad to be back for a little bit, or at least part of Around Comics still. I'm not gone completely from it. And I hope you enjoyed this first episode of Around Comics Presents.
Hi-ho, I'm the king of Giant Land. Ho, ho, come along and we'll have some fun. Hi-ho, party time in Giant Land. Ho, ho, I'm a friend, come along, come along. Ho, bum, there'll be fun for everyone. Ho, ho, in the land of Giant Man.
Take me in your hand, Mr. Giant Man. Let's go together to the Giant Man. Gotta get going for the sun goes down.
I invite you all to come. Ho, ho, everybody will be there. Hi, ho, we will dance the giant way. Ah, ha, you can dance in double time.